Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Shit Show with J-Bo. This is J-Bo. How the hell are you? I'm doing pretty well. I just got off work a little while ago. I do four tens in a row, and I'm down here in Cumberland, Maryland, growing that fine, fine medical cannabis. I'm halfway through my week. I'm feeling pretty good. I'd probably have a little more energy, but I worked out, man. I'm trying to, like, eat healthy, you know. What are you guys eating? Are you eating healthy? Are you eating good? What did I have? I had some chicken breast and a salad and some broccoli, and I don't know, it's very tasty. It's I could really go for a cheeseburger. I haven't had a cheeseburger or fries in like 3 weeks. And people ask me if I'm just like not eating carbs or something, and that's not really the point. The point is to break myself of these horrible habits, such as fast food, such as burgers, fries, just all this stuff that I honestly am pretty much addicted to, including Taco Bell. Crazy. I was craving it every single day. I had to stop it. Another one of my addictions will be a cell phone. Last night I walked down. I was having a hard time thinking about my mom and things like that. I decided to take a walk, and I walked down to the bar. It's about a half mile away. And my phone was not charged. And I remember thinking, well, I'll just walk down without the phone being charged. But it was kind of this issue, like, I'm not going to have my phone on me. And it was a very small, low-level anxiety, maybe low to mid-level anxiety kind of passed through me thinking about doing this. And I did it, and I felt really good. I walked down. It was a beautiful night. I walked through the Sheetz parking lot and talked to some people, hung out with this guy named Fancy Josh at Uncle Jack's bar. It's a Steelers bar here in Cumberland, Maryland, and I didn't need my phone after all. So the reason why I bring that up is because I'm addicted to not only fast food but my phone, and I'm addicted to politics, and I feel like a cuck because I'm watching somebody else live their life, and but while I'm on the political train, and I'm not going to get off the political train until Trump, you know, stands against Bernie, and we see who wins that competition in like 9 months, you know, till the president is elected. But the next 4 years after that, I'm going to be chill with politics. I got to live my life. I got to do my thing. But until then, till the election, me and Dave, we vowed to do a podcast about politics, about the current state of politics, to let all you fine people know what our take is on the whole affair. I've got impeachment fever. Do you got impeachment fever? Everybody's got impeachment fever, especially Adam Schiff. Oh, man, he is a sanctimonious dude. He's very morally righteous. Anyway, me and Dave did a podcast. I hope you like it. I'm about to play it. I think we talked Saturday afternoon. Sorry I couldn't get it up any earlier, but I was too damn tired yesterday. Shit. Anyway, this is the Shit Show with J-Bo. Here's my theme song.
What do you want to start out with, Dave?
Well, we talked about impeachment last time, and we previewed it, and it pretty much didn't finish yesterday. It's going to go on through next week into Wednesday, but pretty much done. And I wanted to go over sort of what the Democrat House managers had to prove in order to essentially prove their article of impeachment, the first article of impeachment, abuse of power. What they had to prove to make that an acceptable article. Okay. And so I think the first thing they had to prove was that Trump wanted the Ukrainians to announce an investigation into the Bidens. And did they prove that? Yes and no. Like, that was actually already proven when Trump put out the transcript, you know? So that is the first step that, you know, did Trump want an investigation? Yes. Now, the second thing is, did Trump make the $391 million in aid contingent upon that announcement? And this one, I would say there is evidence to it, but they did not prove it. Their best evidence is that Gordon Sondland talking to people over in Ukraine, saying that the money would be contingent on an announcement. But on the other hand, there's no evidence that Trump told him to do that. He just assumed that that's what was going on. And there's no evidence that Trump told him that. Now, this is where John Bolton would come in, where Bolton in his book is saying that Trump did tell him that the money was contingent upon the announcement. But without Bolton's testimony, it remains unproven. And even if Bolton testified it, he couldn't prove it. And then, so that's kind of an unproven but possible scenario where Trump really did make that money contingent on the announcement. And it's especially unproven since it didn't happen. They got the money and there was no announcement. So they really were not able to prove that. Now, the third thing they had to prove is what we talked about a lot last time, was that making that money contingent upon the announcement, pressuring them into the announcement, was done for the purpose of hurting Joe Biden in the election, with the understanding that what Biden did was legit, right? Meaning that he wanted a phony investigation. He thought Biden was legit, but wanted him investigated anyway just to help himself. So they essentially had to prove that Trump did not think that Biden was corrupt.
Which is ludicrous.
Right, because Trump, I'm certain that Trump thinks Biden is corrupt. There's plenty of video evidence of Trump saying Biden's are corrupt.
Well, you know what's interesting, Dave, about that whole thing where the government almost relies upon the public not knowing these things from the past, like Biden's corruption, to kind of act as if, well, Trump just found out about it too. He was just doing this. You know, without the information of like Pam Bondi, who I thought was very impressive in many ways, laying out the entire Biden thing and the fact that like Obama was leery of it and there were people prepped on this particular situation long before Trump came in. You know, it's kind of like the when Trump had Soleimani taken out, the Iranian general. You know, people think, oh, Trump's such an idiot, he must have just made this snap decision. But what they don't realize is this is a guy that's been watched for many years, has pulled many things that the public isn't really privy to. And so it comes as a surprise, and it seems like the left uses, oh, you see, he just made this rash decision, not telling everybody, well, there was this rich vein of information before this all happened. You know, so same goes with the Bidens. You know, there was a ton of reason to find him suspicious. And as soon as you find out that everybody thought it was totally questionable, then it makes what Trump did much in a much rosier colored light. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. And the impeachment article said with corrupt purposes or for corrupt reasons. So like we talked about last time, if Trump believes the Bidens are actually corrupt, then he, Trump, did not have a corrupt purpose and the article goes away. And the Trump defense spent a lot of time on that, and I think they won that argument. So, you know, this goes back to witnesses and should we have witnesses or not? And really, the only thing that some of these witnesses like Bolton could have spoken to would have been the contingency. Was the money contingent on an announcement of an investigation? But even assuming they had proven that, they could not prove the third part, which is that Trump had a corrupt purpose. So witnesses were irrelevant, really. And so last night they were voted down and there's not going to be witnesses. There probably won't be any new documentary evidence. And they're going to just next week on, I think, Tuesday or Wednesday, they're going to, the the House managers are going to give their closing arguments. Trump's defense is going to give their closing arguments. Senators are going to get up and talk for 10 minutes each. Then they're going to vote on whether to acquit or not.
So it was always a fake trial in essence. I mean, once it reached the point where it just reached. I mean, we always knew that the right side had the vote. That's a little scary. As far, like, so let's say Trump wins, but he loses with the House and the Senate in 2020. Could they impeach again? And then if they have the votes, they would just throw his ass out? I mean, is that how it works? Like, could they do the same thing, but actually throw him out if Republicans wouldn't have the votes to keep him in?
I think technically, yes, they could. And so going back to the impeachment article, they charged abuse of power. And this is something the Trump defense really banged the table on, was you can't just charge somebody with abuse of power, because all that means is you as the Congress didn't like what the president did.
Right.
If you can't point to a crime or something specific that happened, and you come up with this concept, this nebulous abuse of power,
yeah.
You know, you can always say somebody abused the power or somebody, you know, that's not...
It's a matter of opinion.
Right. So what I would like to see happen would be the Senate vote on a resolution to essentially censure the House of Representatives and say, don't do this shit again. If you want to impeach the president, you have to have more than a theory and innuendo. You actually have to have a crime and evidence.
Yes.
Don't waste our time. Don't do this again. And that would make it more difficult for another sham, assuming if there's a Democrat Senate and House. You know, it wouldn't stop it necessarily, but I think it would be helpful. And really, you know, kind of what you were talking about before in terms of kind of Trump not really giving a shit, and that's why people like him. Put a different way is that he's a fighter and not sort of a politician. A politician may have been okay with having witnesses, like Mitt Romney did, you know, or just, you know, give them an inch, let them have their say, and I'm still innocent or whatever. But Trump's like, no, they're wrong.
Yeah.
This is horseshit. Goes to McConnell and says, no, we're fighting this hard. I did nothing wrong.
Yeah.
Stop them in their tracks. Don't give them any inches, because they'll take a mile.
And we'll be damned if they're going to get Bolton. Every single devastating witness the Democrats brought up was not devastating at all. I don't think Bolton would personally be able to devastate anything, but we'll never know. And I think Trump probably had an idea about that too, but he's just like, you know what? I don't care if it looks bad. Fuck you. You didn't give us any witnesses. You steamrolled the whole process to make me impeached for life. So no, I don't care. And you're not getting Bolton, you know?
Yeah. Game over. I win. You know, take your victory as quickly and as strongly as you can. There's no looking at a secondary effect of, well, this may make me perceived in a certain way. It's like, no, just dominate your opponent, win. And that's what they're doing, it seems like.
It's like Trump's old school, and it's like Obama, you know, it would have been distasteful for him to fight with such vigor and such growth.
Right.
You know, ambition makes you look pretty ugly, I guess, in the words of Radiohead. But Trump simply doesn't care. I mean, you know, yeah, it's a very interesting time. I mean, most interesting president I've ever seen, you know.
But it was fun, you know, it was the whole TV show of it was interesting, because you had Adam Schiff going up there telling his stories, really mischaracterizing a lot of what the Trump defense was saying, just so much innuendo. And he got up there and told a story about, you know, what if Trump was working with the Russians and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, he's just really pissing on the Senate's leg and telling him it's raining. And you had Jerry Nadler going up there telling the Senate that they were on trial. he was disrespectful to the Supreme Court justice. Now there was by not stopping immediately when the justice asked him to. The Schiff called Trump's defense team duplicitous. They were just kind of nasty and liars. And I think the Senate may have been like kind of offended by it. You know, maybe if you made your case without being jerks, you know, maybe you'd have your witnesses. But that's just who they are.
That's right, man. Fucking jerks. So going forward here, there was some talk that this issue is not resolved, that the left does not see this as a clear impeachment. There will be an asterisk. Is there any weight to that? I mean, obviously, it's kind of like, you know, when the Steelers beat the Seahawks, a few people remember that it was kind of there's some questionable calls. But as history, I mean, do you think after 2 weeks from now, anybody aside from hardcore politically astute lefts are bitching about the fact that there were no witnesses? Or do you think this carries momentum and carries into 2020 or anything like that?
I think one of the major reasons they did this impeachment, and especially with the storyline they did, that storyline being that he was interfering in the elections. So the election is going to be invalid, right? The 2020 election, if Trump wins election in 2020, he did it because he cheated. So that's one of their storylines that led into this.
But
now they have, combined with that, he should be out of office. You know, he's acting like a king. He's cheating in the elections, totally illegitimate. So they already have their, if they lose to Trump in 2020, they have their plot lines of this guy's illegitimate. We still have a right to go after him and constantly investigate him in lieu of actually doing our jobs.
Yeah,
I think they'll stick with it. I think they think it's at least worth having as one of their storylines. But no, I mean, the Senate does what the Senate does.
Right. You seem to see that a lot with Democrats not being responsible for elections, or sorry, the losses, you know, not taking it like a loss, is a Georgia governor who claims she was the victor still?
Yeah, she never conceded. And she was like 20,000 votes off or something. and there's like Hillary Clinton's like, she's the real governor of Georgia. No, she lost. So I don't know. I don't know why they do that. You know, I think that's something that can get their constituents riled up. You know, we're being cheated. People are being turned away from the ballot box, and we're really actually doing much better as a party than it seems like, because we're getting cheated by these evil Republicans.
I was trying to explain to my grandmother yesterday. She couldn't understand it. She was so wrapped up in all the impeachment. And I'd come in, and she'd just have a terrible, worried look on her face after Schiff was talking. And, I mean, she was just totally disgusted.
Yeah.
And she was, you know, totally disgusted. And it's making a lot of America sick. And I was trying to explain to her, she's like, well, why do people hate Trump so much? And I was like, well, I don't know. I think that somehow when Obama was in, and some of the Democrats, they look at liberalism like a religion, practically. And so they've been inundated with the fact that, like, we are completely and wholly righteous, and this other side is evil and whatever it is. But the media reinforces it, and when you see people that actually love this guy getting voted into office, there's so much cognitive dissonance. And I do think it's real. Like, I don't hate the left. I didn't hate Obama. I mean, I thought maybe some of his policies were off, and I think maybe some of the left doesn't see the whole picture. But I never hated them like they hate Trump. Just as an aside, where do you think Trump derangement syndrome comes from? Because I don't think it's from his policies per se. Is it brainwashed from the media? Any insight into that, Dave?
Well, he's not one of them. He's not a politician. He doesn't I don't know. He's not in the club. And he's brash, and he does fight them full force constantly. He gets in their face and calls them fake news and makes funny nicknames about them. And they don't like the people who vote for him. They don't like the people who cling to their guns and Bibles. And they don't understand why these people like Trump. Why would a Christian like Trump, who cheats on all his wives and is a horrible person? They don't understand it. I think it's derangement because they don't understand it. And, I understand it, but I can't explain it very well. But to be a liberal and see sort of this coalition he's created on the right, it just baffles their mind, and it makes them angry. confusion turns into anger, turns into delusion.
Because they've been indoctrinated. Like, everybody's been indoctrinated, but I believe the left, it seems like maybe the version of the right in the 80s or something, where this is their religion. I mean, this means so much, and how could anybody possibly see things a different way? And, you know, if I sat down with any person from the left, and there are people that hate me because they know I'm a Trump supporter, if I sat down with them and just explained to them, I don't know, half of them would not they agree with me, but they would understand, you know, because it's very obvious, like, Trump is just a man. He's not a god. He's not the fucking devil. I just don't understand what the big deal is about. He's a Republican president. He'll be out in 4 years. It's very strange. I was trying to explain it to my grandmother because she just didn't get it. I said, I don't know, Grandma.
Yeah. A while back, I tried to explain, to literally somebody wearing a Hillary Clinton T-shirt, that, I don't like the Bushes. I don't like the Clintons because of the foreign wars and all the nonsense they do and the nation building. Doesn't it make sense? I don't like either of those people. I'm not a hardcore right winger or anything like that. I don't like the Bushes. I like the idea of being not isolationist, obviously, but a little more focused on having a strong country as opposed to being dominant across the world. And that's what a lot of people in this country think, and that's probably one of the backbones of Trump's coalition. And just the look I got was not of understanding, it was of disdain. And how can you like Trump? And it's like, I just told you.
He's just a dude, and I don't hate him. Yeah.
But there are real reasons, and like I said, those real reasons include sort of that non-interventionism and the being totally tied to the crazy foreign policy that we've developed over the past 30 years. And there's a lot of money and a lot of power involved in that crazy foreign policy that we've developed over the last 30 years. And a lot of people indoctrinated by the propaganda or whatever, lack of a better word, that's been put out by that power structure over the past 30 years.
Right.
So, people are see things one way, and you're not changing nobody. It's really hard to change people's minds because everybody thinks they're right by definition.
What kills me also is the left talk. The liberal plantation thinking, where if you're black, for instance, you must vote Democrat because the right is evil race, because they believe in like Christianity and having guns. It's like, well, last time I checked, there are a lot of Christian churches that are very black. A lot of black folks carry guns. Down in Virginia, there was a big rally, a big Second Amendment rally, and it was more diverse than anything, And if you read the media, you'd be convinced that it was a bunch of Timothy McVeighs and the Unabombers going down there to blow up the place. But in reality, it was like peaceful, people are peaceful around guns because, they're watching themselves because they too could get shot, It's such a myth. And they pit races against each other. The left does. What I heard that if black support rises above 20%, I mean, I don't know if that's 20% of black folks, that the Democrats will never win another election, which speaks volumes to why there is a shit ton of propaganda in this liberal plantation thinking, you know?
I don't know if it's, well, it's just you're born into something, you know? We're all, in a way, sort of born into a political ideology just based on how we're raised or whatever, or your community is, or, you know, it's just
right.
Your environment, and you're just in it, and, you know, so it's hard to get out of that. But I agree. I think that's why Trump, that's part of the reason why Trump scares the political establishment so much, is that he does have the potential to shift the African-American vote towards Republicans, which, yes, would sink the Democrats hard, especially in places in the industrial Midwest and the Northeast. You know, I mean, if Trump got 45% in Massachusetts or something, that would be crazy, you know? And if he gets 20% of the African-American vote in Massachusetts, he would end up getting 45% of the vote there. You know, things like that where it's, you know, changing the landscape. And that would be a change for decades and really undo a lot of the work the Democrats did in the 60s and 70s in terms of trying to capture that vote and create that environment where people grow up as Democrats. So that would have long-term effects. And I think it's possible for him to, maybe not 20, but all he needs, I think he got less than 10 last time, but if he got 12 or 14, yeah, he'd win big.
Kanye West on Joel Osteen. I mean, my grandmother is a fan of Kanye West now because she saw him on Joel Osteen. You know what I mean? I mean, that says a lot, dude.
That's awesome.
He's the guy that said George Bush hates black people. You know, like, he was different and things have changed. I mean, rappers, for instance, and Mike Tyson and Muhammad Ali, they were all like best buddies with Trump. He runs as a Republican, and all of a sudden, whatever sets in, and Trump's this, Trump's that, he's a racist, he's horrible, man. He's just a guy, for whatever reason, running as a Republican.
I might have to watch Joel Osteen now. You know, I've never seen Joel Osteen, so I might have to watch that guy just to see Kanye West.
Right. So, dude, I want to talk about the Democratic primaries a little bit. I know you want to talk about that, and you told me before, so let's talk about it. But are you feeling the burn, man? Do you think he's going to do this or what?
Certainly what the polls look like. And Warren has fallen to fourth behind Amy Klobuchar. And I think we talked about how would impeachment affect that Iowa vote. Because Bernie and Klobuchar and Warren were going to be locked in the Senate while Joe Biden could bring his no malarkey bus tour all throughout Iowa. If the Democrats had hoped that would help Biden, it didn't. Because Joe Biden is Joe Biden and the no malarkey bus tour is super boring. And with Bernie in the Senate, they just sent out AOC to get everybody fired up for the burn. So it has really actually helped Bernie. And that's interesting. If he wins there and, say, Warren comes in fourth, that'll really knock Warren out effectively. And then when they go over to New Hampshire, without Warren peeling off a bunch of Bernie votes, then Bernie should be able to take New Hampshire. Then you go, I think Nevada's third, or Nevada. And I think Bernie's ahead in the polls there, too. So it's not until South Carolina where Joe Biden can really hope to get a win. And by that time, he might be toast.
What about Bloomberg, man? He's going to wait for a few months and drop in with his billions of dollars. Does he – I mean, obviously he's got that money. He can stay in as long as he wants, and that's half the battle with this shit. Do you think he stands a chance with anything?
I think he – I don't know if he can win, but I think he's going to have a say in this somehow, and I don't know how. I think he more directly competes with Joe Biden than he does with Bernie Sanders. So, in a way, if he gets on the ballot in some of these states, like in the South, he's going to peel off Biden votes in the South. He's going to peel off Biden votes in Michigan and Pennsylvania and New York. So I think it really, more than anything, hurts Joe Biden and helps Bernie Sanders, which is ironic because that's the exact opposite of what the Democratic establishment wants. So I don't know how that's going to play out, but he's going to have a say in it because I think he's a strong candidate, and I see his commercials twice a day. But I also think he's also part of the end of Elizabeth Warren, because part of her kind of very much unspoken constituency was some of the banks and the financial institutions were kind of behind her. But Bloomberg that's his industry. That's, you know, every bank in the world pays Mike Bloomberg's company millions of dollars a year to use his information systems. So they're buddies. So Elizabeth Warren has probably lost a good chunk of her funding, and he's taken her out, I think, just by his presence, or helped to anyway. So I guess I texted you last night my conspiracy theory about how Mike Bloomberg should end up being Bernie Sanders' vice president.
It's funny you say that. I had forgotten that you texted me that, because I think I was half asleep, and I was just about to bring that up to you as if I had read it somewhere.
It's on Axios. But yeah, last time we talked about how the best job in the world might be Bernie Sanders' vice president, because after 2 years of being president, Bernie's going to have a heart attack and croak, and then you get to be president without running for it.
Joe Biden. I don't think Joe Biden's super long for the world, man.
Yeah, he could probably go at any minute. He's all angry and stuff, you know. Man dies while shouting at cloud kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, Bernie has the he definitely has the grassroots support. You know, like, I almost want to see him go head-to-head with Trump, because they're the two guys that weren't – well, I guess Trump was a billionaire. However, he also had strong grassroots support, you know, from his game show hosting days, or no, you know, from his reality show, rather, from his, you know, jet setting, helicopter riding 80s, you know, persona. But he has amazing grassroots support. You know, he sells out stadiums. And Bernie Sanders, through whatever reason, had that same kind of support 2016. He was fucked over. Trump got to face the slightly weaker candidate for sure. I kind of wouldn't mind seeing them go head to head. I want to see an ideological battle. People on the right keep saying, oh, Bernie's easy, man. Bernie might be easy, but in the end, I don't know if anybody gives a shit about his policies. I think they like Bernie. I think he offers a true change to the establishment. So does Trump. It should be hella interesting. I mean, do you find that appealing? Like Trump isn't really the president till he faces Bernie.
Everybody sort of says, you know, Bernie got screwed over by the Democrats, and
yeah,
he did to an extent. But Hillary would have won that election anyway. She would have won that anyway. So I don't, you know, necessarily feel like he got screwed that bad. Yeah, he got screwed technically, but I don't think he would have won the nomination anyway. In terms of him going up against Trump, yeah, I would. That would be the most interesting race, and it would be the most clear cut in terms of, well, you know, if you're in the middle of the road, you have to make a decision. You know, you can't just be like, well, they're about the same, whatever. And I think that would be it would provide a lot of information about who this country is and how serious we are about potentially going towards a more European-style socialism. Do we really want that? If you really have to make that choice,
I mean, Bernie,
do you want that?
Bernie has had the luxury of operating, in a sense, in secrecy. I mean, I suppose if I was so inclined, I could go look up all his policies. But generally, people see this older guy with a smile and whatever. He's a democratic socialist. Once Trump trains his guns on that guy, who knows? I mean, he could fold like a cheap suit. I mean, he's pretty powerful now. But Trump, will tear people apart. And I just wonder if his policies, not that I'm totally hip to them, could stand up to Trump's firepower. And if in the end people – yeah, it's very interesting. Like you said, you'll have to make a choice.
Yeah, and most of those people who have to make a choice are your blue dog Democrats, your more centrist Democrats who hate Trump but like money. Don't want to be taxed, you know, they don't want their taxes to go up 50%. And that's, you know, I think at the end of the day, that's how it plays out, is 60% of the people don't want their taxes raised. And, you know, so not that Trump would win 60% of the vote, but that's what it would come down to, is, yeah, you're cool, Bernie, but, you know, no. And maybe that's lower turnout for certain people on the Democratic side. But strangely enough, you know, I think Bernie might get better turnout than a Joe Biden, because if Bernie gets jobbed again or whatever, the Democrats do something funny at the convention, Bernie's 30% of the party ain't coming out to vote. Those college kids won't come out to vote, because screw those guys. Might as well be Republicans.
And likewise, if Bernie gets the nod, I don't know that he has tremendous black support. Joe Biden supposedly does. Well, then that part maybe comes for Trump, or maybe doesn't vote at all.
I agree. And we'll see how Bernie does in the South. You know, in South Carolina, he could shock. You never know. You never know what their grassroots operation is like in the South. Maybe they're changing minds. I don't know. You know, everybody's assuming, I have assumed, that Joe Biden will dominate the African-American vote in the South. But that's not proven out yet. So if
he'll be
Bernie
he'll be the third black president. Clinton,
yeah.
Obama, Biden. All right, Dave. Well, shit. I guess I'll talk to you in a couple weeks. Awesome insight. Maybe there'll be some crazy cool bombshells happening, and we can jump on that bandwagon in 2 Saturdays from now.
All right. Sounds good, Jeff.
All right, buddy. Listen, thanks for being on the shit show. We shall talk soon.
And there it is, folks. Stay tuned for some upcoming episodes of The Shit Show with J-Bo. I'm going to get my buddy Mike Cirillo on here at some point. He is a trans person now. I went to high school with him. I really got to check that scene out. But honestly, I know I've talked about it a lot. It will happen. And my buddy Real Tall, I don't know, man. He's just this awesome dude on Twitter. And he's like, we're right on the same page, except he knows way more than I do. Real Tall News, great guy. And I'm going to get a woman named Erica Wolf Jones on the podcast in the next couple weeks. It's actually Alex Jones's wife, so stay tuned to that. It turns out I used to work with her, had her to my house, tried to put the moves on her. She smartly and politely declined. I remember she was wearing white jeans. Whatever, she is a rad chick. She plays music. I liked her band. She played in my basement. It was cool, man. We worked at the Icon Grill together. So stay tuned for all kinds of shit here on The Shit Show. Anyway, thanks for listening. We'll talk soon. We'll see you later. Bye. Again.